And welcome to Galaxy Moonbeam Nightsight. We are the retro talk program for nostalgia and baby boomer stuff right here on the Galaxy Nostalgia Network. I'm Smitty.
I'm Mike.
I'm George.
And we welcome you to this program. We're so happy to have you with us. This is one of our 30-minute programs, but we're so pleased to have you on board, and we got a fun show lined up for you. Well, it's that time of the year, the holidays, Christmas, and we have something that we all look forward to, and those are some of our favorite Christmas holiday movies that we look forward to seeing year after year after year. And our good buddy George Halilakos is going to talk to us about some of these movies that we recall. And George, what do you have for us? I know there's so many great movies that we look forward to every year.
There are so many wonderful movies. And, of course, a lot of these movies are now produced for television. The Hallmark Channel and Lifetime and other such cable networks are known for having produced some wonderful holiday-themed films. But I want to take us back to an earlier time. And I want to begin by just referencing three films that were released between the period 1946 to 1951 that remain perennial favorites. It's a Wonderful Life, featuring Jimmy Stewart. A Christmas Carol, that is Scrooge, featuring Alistair Stimm and a very young Patrick McNee. And then, of course, there's Miracle on 34th Street, which featured then-child actress Natalie Wood. These are among the most well-known Christmas-themed motion pictures. But I thought what would be fun today is to actually look at some other films from that same era that have now also become perennial favorites. And they embody the themes of not only Christmas, but romance and comedy. And there's four films that I just want to briefly enumerate for you. And then there's a fifth film that has also become a favorite that also evokes the period of the 1940s, but it actually was made in 1983. So very quickly, we begin with 1940, The Shop Around the Corner, featuring James Stewart and Margaret Sullivan, two employees at a gift shop, can barely stand each other, and yet what ends up happening is, without realizing, they're falling in love through a written correspondence as each other's anonymous pen pal. This, of course, gave rise to the popular film known as You've Got Mail, featuring Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks in the late 90s, which had it in an email format. Then in 1942, there was the classic Holiday Inn, featuring Bing Crosby and Fred Astaire. And this concerns an inn which is only open on major holidays throughout the year. It's a crooner, played by, of course, Bing Crosby, a hoofer, played by Fred Astaire, and they are vying for the affections of a beautiful up-and-coming performer. Next, we have A Holiday Affair, which was released in 1949 with Bob Mitchum and Janet Leigh. And it's a Christmas season romance of a young widow, played by Miss Leigh, and a sales clerk, played by Mr. Mitchum, who, thanks to her, is unemployed. And it's a plot line that involves a model train that is prominently featured in both a memorable opening and memorable closing scene, which we'll talk about momentarily. And then there is Christmas in Connecticut, which featured Barbara Stanwyck and Sidney Greenstreet. And this is a real fun one, particularly those of you that are Martha Stewart fans. It's a food writer who has lied about being the perfect housewife, and now she must try to cover her deception when her boss and a returning war hero invite themselves to her home for a traditional family Christmas. Now, I want to note here, this is not a criticism of Martha Stewart, because she's the real deal. The fun thing here is that Miss Stanwyck plays someone who's not the real deal, and yet she has to make it work. So these are some fun films that were from the 1940s. And I think what's interesting, how I want to tie this together, is mentioning to you a film that was made in 1983 that's become a favorite called A Christmas Story, featuring Peter Billingsley, Melinda Dillon, and Darren McGavin. And it concerns a young boy, Ralphie, who has to convince his parents, his teacher, and Santa Claus that a red River BB gun is the perfect gift for the 1940s. And it takes place during that same era. And these have all become popular favorites that we enjoy during the holiday season. And, you know, each one of these films is something that we can talk about and share in terms of our favorite memories. Do you guys have any recollections about any of these films or something in particular that is of interest?
I'm going to go tradition, George. The last modern, when I say modern, more like the last up-to-date Christmas-related movie I saw was Rocky IV. Remember the with Drago, the Russian?
That was a
political thriller.
That was 1985.
I quit watching after the BB gun, the Red Ryder. But I go back every year, and I just got to go the old stuff. Of course, It's a Wonderful Life. We get a view of that every year, so maybe we talk about that. But definitely, hands down, the one has to be for me that I can't miss, or else I just can't get out of the year in a proper way, is Miracle on 34th Street.
Yes, of
Little
course.
Natalie Wood, Edmund Gwenn, playing Kris Kringle in Macy's. Just the shots of Macy's, the toys that were in there around the tree, some of the props. We talk about the radios that were on display at Macy's.
Yeah.
The Miracle on 34th Street and It's a Wonderful Life, actually, they do well for us on this show because as you're watching the movie, you're watching storyline, but you're seeing how people lived.
Yes.
The toasters they used, their kitchens,
exactly.
The sinks, the housewife stayed home all day. And that is more than just a movie to me. That's a time that I wish I had lived in. Because people will talk, they'll go to 1990, talk about Home Alone, Macaulay Culkin. It didn't do a thing for me. The Muppet Christmas Carol, kind of Muppets just don't ring my Christmas tree bell up at the top with the angel.
No.
Gremlins made things worse. And there was the stupid, silly ones, Elf. You know, Die Hard.
Yeah.
To me, they've taken Christmas holiday as hostage to sell their movie tickets. Mm-hmm. Opening. Yeah. I mean, the box office lines are all the way around the building on Christmas Day and New Year's Day. I find it offensive. I find the tradition works better for me, mm-hmm. George. Smitty, we talked about It's a Wonderful Life. We talked about the cars and the bar scene and some of the fixtures we would have loved to have had.
Oh, yeah. You look at the background and you see the different things you go, wow, you know. And Mike, I've just got to jump in here. I fully agree with you that it just seems that Christmas has been taken hostage and just these old wonderful movies just portray Christmas in the true spirit of how it should be.
Well, even in a lot of the prominent online sites, it's unfortunate and it's rather disgusting to me that It's a Wonderful Life is listed ranking number 51 of the 52 greatest Christmas time, Christmas holiday movies. And you go over to the number one of the 52 list is Kringle All the Way, of course, back to the Muppets. And it's just how times have changed. But you know what? Growing up, remember watching TV in the late 50s and the 60s, you didn't have a lot of Christmas movies to watch. Mm-hmm. There were several. NBC brought out It's a Wonderful Life. I think nowadays it plays one time on a Saturday night before Christmas, but there was a time in the 60s It's a Wonderful Life played every week, every night for the week up to and including Christmas Eve every year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
NBC had that. That was a staple. That's what you would watch, and everybody would gather around and watch it.
Yeah. And I believe even later still, there was some channel that would actually repeat it over and over, as I recall properly. Mm-hmm. Maybe TBS or somebody.
I believe it was TBS.
Yeah.
Do you know, I was going to mention, talk a little bit more about one film here that had a theme that really resonates even today in the 21st century, A Holiday Affair, because it involved a single mom. She was a young widow, again, played by Janet Leigh. And so she's working as a comparison shopper. And, I mean, she's really working hard to make ends meet. And she is sort of in an on-again, off-again relationship with a young and upcoming attorney. And so she's trying to wrestle with the question, should she marry for the sake of maybe establishing a stronger family structure for her son, because she doesn't really have the strong romantic feelings for this man that she's with. Then she meets Robert Mitchum, and Robert Mitchum, of course, has that swashbuckling, very attractive to both men and women attitude towards life as a sales clerk, and he's there selling the toys. And what ends up happening is the movie opens up looking at a beautiful model train set. And again, I go back to that wonderful program that we did about model trains. And suddenly you fade back and you realize you're not looking at a real train. You're in a toy store, or rather a department store in the toy section. And then the movie concludes the same way, because what ends up happening is that it concludes that you're on board the train. They're celebrating New Year's Eve. Janet Leigh is there with Robert Mitchum and with her young son. And they're heading off to California. And suddenly it fades back, and you see them actually arriving in Southern California with the palm trees. Very interesting.
And there was quite a period of time, George, when a lot of the big studios would attempt remakes of the classic Christmas-oriented movies.
Yes.
Most of them bombed. You have to agree. I'm thinking of The Bombers of Life, Christmas in Connecticut, that wonderful classic with Barbara Stanwyck. And what, 35 years later, it was Dreck. I don't know how it did.
It was with Diane Cannon, I believe.
With Arnold Schwarzenegger, Christmas in Connecticut. And I said, well, you know, there goes part of our heritage just to sell tickets. And there's nothing like sitting home with your chocolate, your hot chocolate, and with the smell of pine in your room, because it's a real Christmas tree.
Yes.
That brings it together. With people like us who are talking about memories, if you're 17 years old, this is going to make absolutely no sense to you. But in some cases, it may. Go back and see what we did before we were seeing how many iTunes gift cards we were going to get thumbtacked to the mantle where the Christmas stockings used to be.
I think you've just evoked on something very important here, Mike, and also Gilbert, is the sense of family and doing things as a family. I think that was what makes A Christmas Story so very popular, is that you may recall that at the end of the movie, the family's turkey dinner gets ruined by some invading dogs that got in through the back door, and it ruined the kitchen. So they end up going to a Chinese restaurant to celebrate their Christmas dinner. And yet there is this sense of community, of family, because they're there at the table. They're thankful, you know, for the blessings that they've received. And in fact, you know, the narrator concludes by saying that, you know, of all the Christmases, that's the one he remembers, not even so much for the Red Ryder rifle that he got, but because of the sense of family and love. And all of these films that we've mentioned here, including the earlier ones, Wonderful Life, Miracle on 34th Street, Scrooge, the original Christmas Carol, they all remind us of the reason for the season.
They do, and they intertwine the American culture in the mid-20th century. We did an episode previous to this one about the school dance. Well, remember the school dance scene in It's a Wonderful Life?
Yes.
How the swimming
pool opened up.
You had Alfalfa, Carl Schweitzer there.
Yes, of course.
You had them doing the Lindy Hop. There was a lot of the American culture. Frank Capra was a magician.
Yes,
he was. Bring American culture together.
Mm-hmm.
Even Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. American culture, you look how far or perhaps how low we've evolved since the 30s and 40s and 50s, and you go back, and this was the American staple. This is how we operated. This is how we lived. This was our culture. This wasn't made up by movie guys. Frank Capra just created a mirror of our daily life.
He did indeed. I've got a little bit of trivia for both of you and for our Galaxy Nostalgia Network audience, and that is concerning A Christmas Story. As you recall, Darren McGavin played the role of the father, and of course he was known for being somewhat foul-mouthed in the picture, which of course they bleeped out. But I just learned something very recently, and that is that originally Jack Nicholson was originally considered for that role. I don't know whether in fact it was offered to him and he refused, but I want to just ask you and all the members of the audience here to consider, how would that film have been different or perhaps even more iconic had Jack Nicholson played the role of the father instead of Darren McGavin?
That's kind of a crazy thought, to have Jack Nicholson in that role.
But you can see that he would have the persona to do that. I mean, because of his ability to just morph into so many different types of characters.
Well, I keep thinking of him in that horror movie when he breaks through the door, you know, and he says,
Here's Johnny.
Well, what great memories of films and our favorite Christmas holiday movies, George. So we're going to be back with you again in just a moment, because you're going to talk to us about another holiday thing that's kind of a favorite for all of us. So it's time now for our retro commercial. So don't go away. We're going to continue with the second half of Galaxy Moonbeam Night Sight right after this. You're listening to Galaxy Moonbeam Night Sight on the Galaxy Nostalgia Network.
Now, if you know your oats and want to feel your oats and taste how good an oat cereal can be, well, you go for Cheerios. Great way to start the day with really great eating. That's Cheerios, one of the few foods made from oats. The tasty cereal grain everyone should have at breakfast. Crisp and golden, as only a toasted oat cereal can be. And nourishing? Why, a Cheerios breakfast gives you the power protein that grown-ups need to help stay in trim and youngsters need to grow on.
toasted oat goodness, toasted oat flavor, a delicious power breakfast. That's Cheerios.
If you know your oats and want to feel your oats and want to taste how good an oat cereal can be, you go for Cheerios.
Well, Cheerios, I've had my share of Cheerios, and my mom telling me, eat your oats. You're not leaving till you finish your oats. Usually she was referring to oatmeal. In this retromercial, we were referring to Cheerios, which everybody listening knows about Cheerios. You can be 3.5 years old, and if you're able to dial in a podcast, we're going to give you an award, but you know what Cheerios are. You're back with Galaxy Moonbeam Nightsight here on the Galaxy Nostalgia Network. We're getting all Christmassy here. We don't talk holiday, we talk Christmas.
Christmas.
Because it's our show and we can do whatever we want. I'm here with my dear, dear chum, Gilbert Smitty Smith, and my good buddy, palsy wowsy George Halilakos. We're sitting here reminiscing about Christmas. What would Christmas be without those great Christmas parades? We're going to talk a little bit about it. George has put together a great little segment here. George, Santa Claus Lane Parade for me, but go for it, George.
Well, yours truly, having lived on both the West and East Coasts, has a special appreciation, not only, of course, for the Hollywood Christmas Parade, which, of course, Mike, you remember, as I do, being known as the Santa Claus Lane Parade, but also the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. And it's interesting, both of these parades run parallel courses. The Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade was first held in 1924. The Hollywood Christmas Parade first began in 1928. And both of these iconic parades actually took a sabbatical during the midst of World War II, during 1942 and 44. But both of them were able to reopen to record crowds in 1945. What's interesting about the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade is that in pop culture, the arrival of Santa Claus at the finale of the Macy's Parade traditionally marks the beginning of the Christmas season. And it's a greatly anticipated event. And, of course, now it's been regarded as the beginning of the shopping era. And an additional consideration about Macy's is, as we talked about it earlier in this program, it's associated with a great actress, Natalie Wood. The film Miracle on 34th Street, which actually served to help make the Macy's Parade from a regional to a national event, because actual footage of the parade was incorporated into the film. And, of course, as a young Natalie Wood comes to learn the meaning of Christmas through her encounter with Kris Kringle, who is not only the Macy's Santa Claus, but the real Santa Claus himself, we see this intertwined with the Macy's Parade. And it's something we think about as we watch all of the wonderful parade of balloons that goes on. The Macy's Parade, of course, is known for its animal-shaped balloons, first introduced in 1927 with Felix the Cat. That's for our good friend Gilbert, who is the aficionado of cats. And interestingly enough, since we talked about cats, Mickey Mouse it was first appeared in 1934. And of course, we've had many other characters since then. Now, the Hollywood Christmas Parade, which of course we remember as the Santa Claus Lane Parade, Mike Bragg and I do, used to be held on Thanksgiving Eve, Wednesday evening, but eventually was moved to Sunday after Thanksgiving. And although it didn't have and does not have the same national following that Macy's does, it's very well known because of its film and music celebrities that over the years have participated and have been an integral part of the festivities. In the case of the Hollywood Christmas Parade, Gene Autry, the singing cowboy himself, who was the Grand Marshal of this parade in 1980, actually was reported to have been inspired to write his iconic song, Here Comes Santa Claus, because of hearing children cry out in the parade route in 1946, Here Comes Santa Claus. And this one was noted because of its local flavor. Mike, I think you probably can add something to this, but one of my memories about this was our next-door neighbor had a pet bulldog. And since I went to Burbank High School, it was the high school mascot, the Burbank High School band and the bulldog were able to be part of the parade route. And we thought it was so amazing that we actually knew someone who was in the parade.
Did you actually know the people who
were
there?
Yes, yes.
And how did they get on that?
Well, I guess somehow, because living in Burbank, which of course is near the studios, there was a connection there. I guess one of the studio executives knew of, you know, Burbank High School having a good band. And then, of course, says, well, you got to have the high school mascot, which is the Bulldog. And that was happened. And our next door neighbor, they had the actual Bulldog that was the mascot. Used to go to all of the local sporting events associated with the high school for many, many years.
Okay, yeah. Because if you in the Hollywood, in the Christmas, what are we going to call it, George? The Christmas
Club? I'm going to call it the Santa Claus Lane Parade, because
okay,
that's what I grew
let's
up
do
with.
That. All your L.A. people are going to know what we're talking about, Skipper Frank and Tom Hatton. But the reason I ask you that question, if you knew somebody, because all the car dealers would donate their convertibles
yes.
for that evening, and they would get free publicity in response. And if you knew somebody, there's a chance you could get up and sit on the back, on the trunk lid with whoever was waving at everybody. In my case, it was a councilman, Art Snyder.
I remember him.
Yeah, Arthur Snyder. And I got to sit with him and, you know, this isn't so cool. I'd rather be on the curb because I can't see anything. And I'm getting tired of waving. But you could, if you knew, had connections, you could get in. And what a night that was. Hollywood was not the derelict center.
No, it was. It really was a golden age.
It was still the golden age. And I'm talking mid-60s. I'm
yes,
not talking 50s
early 70s,
or 40s yeah. or 70s. It was an event. And we'd come out at Hollywood Western and park the car at the Pioneer Market and walk at night on a Sunday night. I think it was always on a Sunday.
It originally was on Wednesday and then moved to Sunday.
And George Putnam and Monty Montana, and they would bring their horses. The sheriff of L.A. would be in a cowboy outfit with rhinestones
Remarkable.
And bling. And it was a circus parade, basically.
Yes, it was.
Because of the animals. And you mentioned the bulldog. They would have mascots. You know, if your mascot was a ferret, they would have a ferret in a cage on the hood of a convertible. And, yeah, here's Tony the Ferret from El Monte High or whatever. And, The baton twirlers, the girls from the high school.
Yes, of course.
It almost felt like the big family of L.A. came together, all together for
a
reunion.
It was very real. It was very real. And what is so interesting about this is that there was also a connection with Natalie Wood, just
yes.
like with the Macy's Parade. Natalie Wood, as a grown-up, with her husband, Robert Wagner, they were always in attendance at this parade. And I think one year, I believe it was 1979, that they were grand marshals because they were always a fixture there watching the parade with their young daughters. And sadly to say, it was 2 years after that she and her husband were there as grand marshals. She died tragically in a drowning accident on Thanksgiving weekend, ironically. So to this day, we can associate Natalie Wood with both the Santa Claus Lane Parade and the Macy's Parade.
And we talk about both parades, but any town in America with more than 800 people in population had their version of the Christmas parade or the Thanksgiving parade. And in a lot of cases, if you go to the Midwest, it would be hay wagons,
mm-hmm.
and it would be Wranglers, and the girls from the 4-H Club be bringing their goats on the leashes down Main Street. It was part of Americana. I don't know. I'm sure there's still parades everywhere, especially
yeah.
if you go out to the south to Texas. But it brought together the family in a holiday motif, in a holiday atmosphere. Everybody got their Christmas, their attire, their cheesy sweaters and whatnot. And it was an event. You'd have people selling cotton candy, the chestnuts in the cart, popcorn, pretzels. It was a big party, and it was safe.
It very much so was.
Regardless of what town you were in.
But I have to tell you, because I spent some time on the East Coast, I want to give a brief shout-out to the city of brotherly love. That is Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I lived in Wilmington, Delaware, which is just neighboring Philadelphia. They are noted for two major holiday parades. The first is the Gimbel's Parade, of course, which is a former arch rival of Macy's. And they sponsored, actually, the oldest parade. It started in 1920. It was held in downtown Philadelphia. And when Gimbel's went out of business in 1986, the parade was picked up by a number of sponsors, most recently WPVI. And it's syndicated in different regions, but it's known as the Thanksgiving Day Santa Claus Parade, very similar in format and content to Macy's. And interesting because in the 1947 film Miracle on 34th Street, Gimbel's and Macy's, that rivalry is highlighted in the film, but of course, we see here that Macy's has outlasted Gimbel's. The other one that I want to give a quick shout out to is the Mummers Parade, also held in Philadelphia, but it's held on New Year's Day. And it's believed to be the oldest folk festival in the United States. And there's a lot of local clubs, usually called New Year's associations, that compete in one of four categories: comics, fancies, string bands, and fancy brigades. And they have very elaborate costumes and movable scenery, which take months to complete. And one of the things that my wife Sharon told me, because she grew up in that region, she reminded me that the Mummers Parade was an all-day affair. It started in the morning and it went all the way till 5 o'clock, that it was on TV, and you saw this continuous stream of performing acts. So it's very interesting to see. And, of course, all of this is culminated on New Year's Day with, of course, the famous Rose Parade. And I know we've talked about the Rose Parade in some previous programs, but I guess for me the most favorite memory of the Rose Parades are the great Grand Marshal, some of which appeared multiple times. Shirley Temple, Dwight Eisenhower, even Richard Nixon appeared several times. Although my favorite Grand Marshal was Walt Disney. Walt Disney, he appeared in January 1966, and later that year he passed away.
That's
in
right.
December.
He did pass away.
And so I remember that so vividly. I remember when my mother told me when I came from school, she goes, you know, Walt Disney passed away. And I said, but he was just in the Rose Parade earlier this year. How can that be? Mm. So these parades have a great, great continuity of bridging generations and different eras together. Do you guys have any special memories of other of these parades yourself?
Having lost Shirley Temple last year, earlier this year, Smitty, Shirley Temple passed away, and I remember looking at the retrospective. Shirley Temple actually was Grand Marshal three different times in the Rose Parade. She was the Grand Marshal in 1939 at the height of her fame, of course. She came back 50 years later because of the 50th anniversary of Heidi and came back in 89. And then she came back 10 years later in 99.
Yes.
And each time they would do a retrospective of, now here she is, a U.S. Congresswoman, actually older, actually aged, but it would show this little girl in the curly hairdo,
yes,
and dancing around with Mr. Bojangles. And something evocative about the Rose Parade is the memories that it brings back. George Putnam, the newsman, riding his stallion.
Yes.
You know, the notables.
Everyone who missed him on the Santa Claus Lane Parade was able to see him on New Year's.
To catch him on New Year's, he'd be right back.
Yes, of course.
With a lot of movie stars, Charlton Heston. You mentioned Dwight Eisenhower. Bob Hope was Grand Marshal in 1947 as well as 1969. And believe it or not, Richard M. Nixon was Grand Marshal of the Rose Parade in 1953 and 1960. So you didn't have to be a movie star. You could be a political notable. But Earl Warren was the governor of California. Later
he
on,
he made it also.
Become Supreme Court Justice.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a political statement as well. But at the same time, it was Americana. They called it the granddaddy of them all. Tournament of Roses Parade.
And one of the great things about living and growing up in Southern California was being able to see the parade floats afterwards at Victory Park.
What great memories from that time period, George. Lots of good parades, and everybody loves a parade, so we know that all of our listeners love a parade. So if you have any memories of any parades, we'd love to hear from you. Send us an email here at Galaxy Moonbeam Night Sight.
Even a photo.
Even a photo, yeah. If you have any photos, yeah, send them in. GalaxyMoonbeamNightSight@gmail.com. GalaxyMoonbeamNightSight@gmail.com. Our website is GalaxyMoonbeamNightSight. And don't forget, all of our shows are available on iTunes, and we're slowly, very slowly migrating them over to Mixcloud.com. So you can have two venues where you can listen to our shows, either on iTunes or on Mixcloud. So we sure ask you to listen in if there's any of our shows that you've missed. Well, we've sure had a fun half hour. We're so pleased that you were able to join us. We look forward to having you with us again next time. I'm Smitty.
I'm Mike.
And I'm George.
And until next time, thanks for listening to Galaxy Moonbeam Night Sight on the Galaxy Nostalgia Network. This is the Galaxy Nostalgia Network.